seminary. One of his first students was a guy you might have heard of named Chuck Swindoll, and taught Chuck how to preach, and many, many thousands and thousands of others. His book, Biblical Preaching, was probably the primary reference book in almost every seminary across the country and around the world for preaching classes for many decades. He was a professor at Dallas Seminary, later became at Denver Seminary, was the president at Denver Seminary for a while, and then most recently was at Gordon-Conwell Seminary, and has recently retired, so to speak. Now all he does is just travel around the world and teach and preach and do the radio Bible class and write books and other things that every 82-year-old man should do when he's tired. So it's a real privilege. I don't know about you, but I like men who finish strong, don't you? Aren't you tired of hearing about guys who do well and all of a sudden they hit about 50, 60 years old and they crash and burn big time? I love being around guys like Haddon, who is still going for it, still in love with his wife, 60 plus years later, enjoying life, loves his two grown kids. One's a pastor and his son's a pastor and his daughter is a traveling motivational speaker, and they're a family committed to Jesus. So I hope your hearts are open. I hope you're hungry. I hope you're ready to receive from the Word of God. Why don't we welcome our special guest, Haddon Robinson.
Thank you, Claude. Two men stood at a bar in downtown Chicago. And as people do when they're filled with the spirits, they just started talking to each other. First fellow said to the second fellow, "Where'd you grow up?" Second fellow said, "Peoria." That's interesting. "I grew up in Peoria." "What high school did you go to?" "Went to Central High." "I went to Central High. When did you go to Central High?" "Well, let's see. 1996 to 2001. I went to Central High in 2006. Went to 1996 to 2001. "Where'd you live in Peoria?" "I lived at 1711 North Adams." "I lived at 1711 North Adams." Just then the phone rang and the bartender picked it up. It was his wife. And she said, "Well, honey, how's it going?" He said, "Oh, it's a slow night. Only people here are the Peterson twins and they're both drunk again." You don't have to be drunk to listen to this group and realize that here are folks who know something about the Spirit. P.R. Fokelman was a Jewish Old Testament scholar. He spent a significant part of his life studying the narratives of the Old Testament. He realized that the biblical writers in the Old Testament were theologians, but they communicated their theology by means of stories. And he knows that they were ripping good storytellers. In fact, he wrote one book that English-speaking people understand. It's called Reading Biblical Narrative. And in that book, he says that there is not a detail in any of these stories that does not contribute to the punchline or to the theology of the story. Now, I've been around the block long enough to know that simply because a scholar says it, I don't have to believe it. When I was reading that book, I was also reading the book of Genesis. And I was reading the story or the saga of Joseph, the final story in the book of Genesis. And I found immediately a section that I didn't think fit at all. Even though Fokelman said it, I'm not sure. I know I didn't believe it. But in Genesis chapter 20, chapter 28. In Genesis chapter 37, oh, it's 10 pages among friends. There's the story of Joseph. And the first thing the writer wants us to know is that Joseph was part of a dysfunctional family. He opens the story by saying that Joseph was about 17 years of age when this took place. And he was his father's favorite son. He was son of his old age. And so Israel, who was Jacob, gave him a beautiful coat. The King James says a coat of many colors, but basically it's a beautifully ornamented coat. Now, some of you men have children. And if you have three or four kids, there's probably one that you like better than the other. But let me tell you this. Don't favor that child with a suit. I mean, every time his brothers saw Joseph wear that coat, they shouted, "My father loves me more than the rest of you." And that created some dysfunction in the family. Brothers hated him. And Joseph contributed to it. It says that he brought a bad report to his father about his brothers. Putting it in ancient Hebrew, he was a snitch. I mean, and I don't care where they lived, I don't care how long ago, you bring a bad report about your brothers, you're a snitch. And nobody likes snitches, especially if you're one of the brothers. And then Joseph, he contributed to it. It says at the end of this first section that he had a dream. And he told the brothers that in his dream, he saw some sheaves that were in a circle. But 11 of the sheaves bowed to the one in the center. And Joseph was clear. I was in the center and you guys bowed to me. And then he had a second dream. This time it was the sun and moon and stars that bowed to him. His father heard about it. He was furious. But I don't care how much God tells you in dreams. Keep it to yourself. I mean, if you're having special dreams and your brothers aren't, and you tell them how good you are and how they're going to be bowing to you. It may be in the Bible, but that's not a guide for you. Don't tell them what God has told you. And five different times in this section, it says his brothers hated him. And it's a dysfunctional family. At the end of that section, in verse 12, his brothers had gone to graze the sheep. And Jacob, Joseph's father, said, "Son, go see how your brothers are doing. Bring me a report." This kid is at the problems with being a snitch, and now his father sends him out again, do it a second time. And Joseph did. And the father said, they're up at Dothan. And Joseph went to find his brothers at Dothan. Dothan is over 50 miles from Hebron, where he started. 50 miles. He doesn't have a motorcycle, doesn't have a bike. 50 miles of walking. 50 miles in the Near Eastern sun. And when he gets to Dothan, 50 miles, he can't find his brothers. They should be there. They're supposed to be taking care of the sheep. Can't find them. And he wanders all over that field and around several times, and finally a man takes pity on him. He says, "So, yeah, I heard your brothers were here, but I heard them say that they were going over to Shechem, to Dothan. It's a Shechem, that's Dothan. That's 17 more miles." So Joseph walks that 17 miles. He's a tired kid when he gets there. When he gets there, his brothers play hardball. They decide they're going to kill him. I mean, when they don't like you, they don't like you. And they're about to kill him, and then they decide that for a while they put him in a cistern, a place where they collect the water. Huge. If you go over to Israel, you'll see them. Huge cisterns, as big as this room. The text says it didn't have any water in the cistern, which is nice. But they put Joseph in, and then the brothers sit down and have lunch. Now, if you want to talk about details that don't matter, he could have told us about the menu they had for lunch. He doesn't. Just that they had lunch. And while they were eating, a caravan comes from the north on the King's Highway, which is right next to the Mediterranean, and went all the way down to Egypt. Interesting, isn't it? Back in Dothan, where he was, in Shechem, where he was, there was no highway. There was no trade route. But in Dothan, that's where the traders come. And so they come down this road, and the caravan has the kind of goods that an upper-class caravan has. Expensive. So that when they get down to Egypt, they got to sell the cargo to wealthy people. But this theology here. At first, I had no idea what it was. I mean, why tell us about Joseph wandering around the field looking for his brothers? Can't find them. Then he gets some stranger that tells them that they've gone from Shechem up to Dothan. But he wouldn't have ever gotten to Egypt if he'd stayed in Shechem. That is, he ran into some traders who took him down to Egypt, and that was the adventure of his life. When Joseph went to Egypt, he never came back, never returned. It's interesting, isn't it? The question is, was God in that? I mean, one of the things about this story is that we see God as a God whose providence is at work. I mean, Joseph never has the voice of God saying, "Joseph, let me explain to you why your brothers put you in the cavern and cistern and why you're here." And in his life where he hit all kinds of difficulties, he never had a prophet saying, "Now sit down, son, let me explain this to you." He muddled through just like we do. It's the providence of God. And it seemed to him that he must have felt, "What in the world is going on? I'm about to die." And yet, he ends up down in Egypt. I wonder how many times he thought about that. But one of the things that I learned from this story is this. That with God, sometimes the shortest distance between two points is a circle. With God, when you think you're marking time, you're making time. God does that. That's his way of working. As I thought about that incident in the story of Joseph, I realized that there was a time in my life when that happened to me. I graduated from Dallas Seminary, and I was assistant pastor at the First Baptist Church in Medford, Oregon. I was in charge of the youth. It didn't go very well. In fact, the deacons were in rebellion against the pastor. And one of the deacons said, you know, you better learn something, son. When we go after the king, we can't get to him, but we can get his prime minister. And I was the prime minister. And another of the deacons, Vince Smith, said to me, look, they're out to get you. They want to teach the pastor a lesson. They're out to get you. Why don't you just leave what you're doing here at the church and come help me at my dairy? He was the owner of Gilman's Dairy. And he said, you know, you do evangelistic preaching all over the country. But when you're here, just run my advertising in my dairy. Make a vice president. So I did it. It worked fairly well, except that it's hard to be a vice president of a growing dairy at the same time you're out preaching every week. But after I had done that for several months, one of the places I was supposed to go to preach was Temple Baptist Church in Fulton, California. It was just another of the meetings I had. And so I went down to Fulton and preached. After I preached twice on Sunday, the pulpit committee came to see me. They said, you know, we had heard about you, and we thought you might be interested in being pastor of our church. Well, I guess I was. And then they said, if you're willing to stay this whole week, preach for us again next Sunday, that'll be a candidating sermon. But in between, we'd like you to meet people in the church and also to meet the board of deacons. And so I did. Everybody I talked to was all for my being the pastor. Pulpit committee voted for me unanimously. Board of deacons voted for me unanimously. Everybody I talked to. Boy, God's going to lead you here. So when I candidated the following Sunday, I came back home to Medford. I said to Bonnie, I'm sure God's calling us to the First Baptist Church down there at Fulton. I mean, and I explained all the people I talked to and how well it went. And I had this inner conviction that this is what God wanted me to do. So Wednesday, the church met, had a vote, and I lost by one vote. I was stunned. I mean, I thought I knew something about finding God's will. One vote. when the chairman of the board called me to tell me that, he was confused and disappointed. I heard it and I was confused and disappointed. The next day, he called me again in the evening. He said, look, I called you back because I've been talking to people about your coming and how the vote went, and you lost by one vote. He said, I talked to three or four people who voted against you, not because they didn't like you, but because they had voted for somebody else that we didn't select, and it's a way of making a statement. But they didn't want you to not come. So he said, if you do it again, come down, do the sermons, meet the group. I'm sure we have more people than we need to get you there. But I couldn't do it. I mean, you talk about all of your expectations being crushed and all of your knowledge of God's will being shown that you don't know it. I just didn't have the heart to do it. 3 weeks after that, I got a letter from Dr. John Walvoord, the president of Dallas Seminary. He said that they were going to have a major in preaching. Never had much emphasis on it before, but going to have a major. And we'd like you to come, the letter said, take that position. So I did. I went back to Dallas. It was not easy. They didn't pay very much. But I had always been interested in preaching and teaching preaching. Great stuff. And I look back at that. Had I gone to Temple Baptist Church at Fulton, good church, great opportunity, I would have gone off in one direction. As it was, I took another direction. And with that, my whole life was changed. That was true for Joseph. He was just looking for his brothers, finding out how they were doing with their sheep. And he ends up with a caravan, went all the way to Egypt. It's true for me. I went to church in Fullerton, California. And I was sure that God was calling me to that church. I lost by one vote. But had it not been for that loss, I would have been down Temple Baptist Church. I mean, one vote short. So I discovered that with God, sometimes when you think you're just going around in circles, it's the shortest distance between two points. That with God, when you think you're marking time, you're making time. And I tell you that tonight simply because some of you may be there. You may be in a position where you feel like you're just marking time. But it may well be that it's God's way of getting you to make time. Some of you may feel you're going around in a circle. But with God, sometimes the shortest distance between two points is a circle. When you trust your ways to Him, He has some strange ways of bringing it all about. So hear it again. With God, the shortest distance between two points may be a circle. What do you think? He's just marking time. He may be making time. Because God wants to get you from point A to point B to point C. And he so often starts in a strange and mysterious kind of way. Would you pray with me about that? Father, I pray for these men as we're together this weekend. I pray that if you're dealing with them in some strange and difficult and different way, that you'd make it very clear. That if they're merely marking time, help them to understand they may be making time. And that with you, the shortest distance between two points may be a circle. And if there are folks here who need to hear that, give them ears to hear.